This is The Rotunda. I'm Tramell Gomes.
You're living in poverty. Your schools are no good. You have no jobs. 58% of your youth is unemployed. What the hell do you have to lose?
Donald Trump makes his pitch to every single African-American in the country. With a pitch like that, even diehard Republicans are left scratching their heads.
I find myself for the first time undecided. That does not mean that I'm voting for Hillary Clinton. That just means that I'm not sure what I want to do about Donald Trump.
That's Latina Republican Bettina Inclán here to explain why this is the worst election of her life. And oh, Florida.
How you drive up Appalachian Parkway, and there before you is the building that was voted the most phallic public building in the world.
Journalist Craig Pittman talks about the Tower of Power in his funny new book. And by the way, you'll hear why Florida's capital is undergoing a facelift.
We have been experiencing damage in the structure for some time. The waterproofing had failed. And as the waterproofing failed, cracks in the concrete began to take place.
That's Florida Department of Management Secretary Chad Popple here to discuss the safety precautions being taken around the Tower of Power. All that and more coming up on episode 73 of The Rotunda. Donald Trump is continuing on his quest to expand his power beyond the Trump Tower. Lately, he set his sights on trying to appeal to black voters.
In recent days, across this country, I've asked the African American community to honor me with their vote.
That's Trump on Saturday. Let's go back to Friday to hear exactly how he's been asking for the African American vote.
You're living in poverty. Your schools are no good. You have no jobs. 58% of your youth is unemployed. What the hell do you have to lose?
Can a pitch get any worse than that? In true Trump form, the speech is highly offensive, riddled with generalizations, and is false. For one, most black Americans are not living in poverty. When it comes to black youth unemployment, the jobless rate for African Americans between 16 and 24 was just under 19%. According to PolitiFact, Trump is probably using a number that captures everyone, including high school and college students who are likely not employed or seeking employment. Despite painting such a negative image of African Americans and other minority groups, Trump remains hopeful in his pitch.
I'm asking for the vote of every single African American citizen in this country who wants to see a better future.
Well, I think I share the concerns of millions of voters who are hesitant about Donald Trump because of his comments that he has made on lots of different groups, on women, on Hispanics, on immigrants, on refugees, on people's faith, attacking fellow Republicans. Sadly, the list is kind of long.
That's Bettina Inclán, a Republican communications and political strategist.
Wait, how did we meet? Which campaign were you on?
I believe it was probably Rick Scott. I was his deputy comms director in 2010.
Yes, yes. And traveling around North Florida and chasing.
Yeah.
So on Friday, just before Donald Trump made his pitch to African Americans, I recorded this interview with Bettina, who, by the way, also previously led Hispanic outreach for the Republican National Committee.
So I am following up with you today because you wrote an article for Refinery 29 saying the title, "I'm a Latina Republican. Here's why this is the worst election of my life." Explain.
Well, my entire adult life, I have worked on Republican campaigns. And, but 2016, for all intents and purposes, for a lot of people, is very different than a traditional campaign. And I find myself for the first time undecided. That does not mean that I'm voting for Hillary Clinton. That just means that I'm not sure what I want to do about Donald Trump. And it's a very odd experience for me because, like I said, I've always, it's never been a question. And I hope to vote for Trump. I want to vote for Trump, but he hasn't made it easy. And I think that what I hope to get out of this article is we should demand more, and we should ask him and his campaign to be the kind of leader that we want and seek as a president and as the representative of the Republican Party. And I think that is valid, that my voice and my vote is important, and I should be able to express my concerns. And just because I am a registered Republican doesn't mean that what I care about isn't important.
So what is giving you pause? What is Donald Trump doing that you are now here faced with thinking about whether or not you're going to even vote for him?
Well, I think I share the concerns of millions of voters who are hesitant about Donald Trump because of his comments that he has made. And as a Hispanic, as a mom, as a wife, as a daughter of an immigrant and a daughter of a refugee, a lot of those things struck a nerve close to home. And beyond some of the policy differences, it's just the tone and rhetoric. And professionally, one of the things that I have dedicated my life to is trying to expand the Republican Party, talk about an agenda of inclusion, talk about an agenda of opportunity. And it worries me that Donald Trump is making that more difficult. And what I want to see is for him to do more of that. The RNC has done a great job in the past. In 2014, you know, we learned a lot of the lessons from 2012 and improved in 2014, had an incredible year, did really well with minorities and diverse groups across the board. And I don't want us as a party to lose that in 2016. I think Donald Trump is getting the message. In just yesterday, we saw a very different speech from him. You know, how I feel is not unique to me. I think there's millions of people that feel that way. And he's trying to take note. And you know, yesterday he was saying how he regretted some of his comments.
Sometimes in the heat of debate and speaking on a multitude of issues, you don't choose the right words, or you say the wrong thing. I have done that. And believe it or not, I regret it.
Again, this conversation with Bettina Inclán is sandwiched between Donald Trump's supposed regret and what many are seeing, especially Black Twitter, as an offensive pitch to African Americans. Later, Trump did mention some of the things Bettina has been working on, which is to make the GOP more inclusive.
And I want our party to be the home of the African American voter once again. I want a totally inclusive country, and I want an inclusive party.
But is that enough? Is it just lip service? Will Donald Trump change? And what will Inclán and others in her shoes do if he doesn't?
Well, Trump is clearly polling is showing that he is doing worse with, you know, women, with minorities, with college-educated voters. He has still time to change that. Now as we enter this final phase of the campaign, and one of his biggest tests will be the upcoming presidential debates. And the comment I made is, you know, I just hope that he is more commander-in-chief, he is more a principled leader versus, unfortunately sometimes, Triumph the comic insult dog. So I'm not saying that he is, I'm just saying that we need more positive leadership and that's nasty rhetoric.
Do you see yourself possibly being able to vote for Hillary Clinton? Or is that a non-option?
Oh, no. Hillary Clinton's not an option. I made it very clear in the article, Hillary Clinton is not an option to me. She's a weak leader, be it her email scandals, her issues with, you know, her background with what happened with Benghazi, her foundation's, you know, questionable ties to organizations that suppress women, suppress different groups. Like, the list goes on and on and on, and of how people, why people think that she is untrustworthy and will not make a good president. That being said, she's not an option. What I have to figure out is, moving forward, I want to vote Republican. The question is will Trump do what needs to be done to win, to bring in people like myself to so he can become president of the United States? I don't know that answer.
What we do know, he is unpredictable.
Yes.
He said those statements that he regrets, but tomorrow he can say, well, I changed my mind. So if
right.
he doesn't improve, what options do you have left?
We'll see. There's a lot of people. Every day I feel there's a new person
voting,
running
right?
for president these days. But we'll, I guess I leave my options open. I was joking with you earlier. I'm a Hispanic Republican female under 40. Every cohort that I belong to votes Democrat. But I'm an optimist. I am the definition of optimist. I don't think that you could do your job of trying to expand the Republican Party to minority groups, to non-traditional Republican voters, and not be an optimist. So I have hope. I have hope for the party. I have hope for this country. And I'm praying for the best, not only for me, but for my son.
That's Republican strategist Bettina Inkline. You can find her on Twitter via her name at Bettina Inkline. You're listening to The Rotunda. I'm Tramell Gomes. Time to lighten things up a bit. If you're a fan of the Sunshine State, well, you should be, especially if you're listening to this podcast. There's a new book out that explains how America's weirdest state influences the rest of the country. Oh, Florida is written by Craig Pittman, a veteran reporter at the Tampa Bay Times.
The conditions that create a lot of the weird stuff that happens are also the reason why so many people have felt the spark of creativity here, and that things have happened here that have influenced the rest of the country. For instance, the guy who invented the computer, John Adanasoff, he grew up in Polk County. His father was a phosphate mining engineer and carried a slide rule everywhere. And because his son became fascinated with the slide rule, that led him ultimately to inventing the computer. Jeff Bezos started his first business in Miami. If it had failed, would we have ever heard of the guy who started Amazon? Probably not. And just on, the list goes on and on and on.
All right, this book is filled with all sorts of historical gems. Think about all of those weird Florida stories you hear about today. Some might think, it simply can't get any weirder. Until it does. But what if you go back in time? You'll soon find Florida is just one of the most interesting states, and we shouldn't even try to resist being weird.
Sometimes very weird things that happened here that ended up influencing the rest of the country. For instance, there was a case out of Miami Beach where two crooked cops were, they would patrol their beat during the day, and then at night they would break into the businesses they'd been protecting. And they communicated with each other by walkie-talkies. And one night a ham radio operator couldn't sleep, and he woke up and turned on his radio and picked up their walkie-talkie transmissions and realized he was hearing a burglary in progress. So he tape recorded what he was hearing and handed that over to the cops. And the cops freaked out because they recognized the voices. These were two of their colleagues. So these guys were arrested, they went to trial, they were convicted, and their attorney appealed the case all the way to the U.S. Supreme Court, not based on the evidence presented in court, but based on the fact there had been a TV camera in the courtroom. Florida was in the middle of a one-year experiment with allowing TV cameras in, and the U.S. Supreme Court ruled that it was okay to have TV cameras in the state courts, and that's why we have cameras in the courts all across the country. That's why you could watch the O.J. trial gavel to gavel, Casey Anthony, and so on and so forth. All because of two crooked Miami Beach cops and a ham radio operator who couldn't sleep.
So Craig Pittman is here to share some of the weird and crazy story highlights in Oak, Florida. Let's call it the Rotunda Politics Edition. Actually, there is an entire chapter on Florida politics.
That chapter is called The Tower of Power, and it starts off by describing, how you drive up Appalachie Parkway, and there before you is the building that was voted the most phallic public building in the world. sort of goes on then to suggest, you know, that maybe that was the architect's way of flipping the bird at the state officials who turned down his initial design for the Capitol. And then kind of goes on from there to suggest that maybe at least some of the folks who work inside the Capitol, that's an apt symbol for the way they treat the voters also.
So what is your favorite Tallahassee story?
My favorite Tallahassee story? I think it involves Sidney Katz, who was a preacher from Alabama and moved to the Florida Panhandle. I think it was Dufuniac Springs. And they had a Baptist convention in Tallahassee where people from all over the state gathered. And so people who were members of the Baptist church in Tallahassee would put folks up for the week while they were there for the convention. Well, it just so happened that Reverend Katz got put up by the governor, Park Trammell. So he was staying in the governor's mansion, and he asked a lot of questions about the mansion. He walked all over it, inspecting it, and finally on the last day, he asked the governor the question that had really been on his mind all week, which was, how much do you pay in rent for this place? And the governor said, oh, I don't pay any rent at all. The taxpayers let me live here for free. 3 weeks later, Sidney Katz announced he was running for governor. And he won. He ran this crazy campaign where he made all his appearances carrying a pair of six guns, because he said the Catholic Church had sent hitmen to wipe him out. And he would end his stump speeches by declaring that the Florida Crackers only had three friends, and they were Jesus Christ, Sears and Roebuck, and Sidney J. Katz. And he actually got elected, but of course subsequently got in trouble for putting all his relatives on the payroll and allegedly selling pardons to state inmates. So the Reverend wasn't quite as morally pure as he seemed to be.
What's the best O Florida political story that sticks out in your mind?
It didn't happen in Tallahassee. It happened in Cedar Key. That the mayor of Cedar Key, a guy named Cotterell, no relation to the longtime Tallahassee reporter Bill Cotterell, had set himself up as sort of this island dictator. He had hired as a town marshal this guy who was basically a thug, and the two of them would walk around carrying shotguns and order people to do crazy things just for their own amusement, like headbutt each other. And everybody was scared of him. Nobody would do anything about it until finally they roughed up the keeper of the customs house on Cedar Key. And that crossed the line because he was a federal employee. And so President Benjamin Harrison actually sent a Navy cutter to Cedar Key with orders to capture the mayor and arrest him and bring him back in irons. And when he got wind that this was happening and he fled, making him the only American mayor to ever be deposed in a military coup. and he was still a fugitive. He was shot dead in Alabama by a police chief up there. But if it was up to me, that event would be recreated every year in Cedar Key. It'd be a big festival like Gasparilla, you know, Cotterell Days. Enjoy your high-priced Reign of Terror popcorn and other beverages, and then you get to see the reenactment of the landing of the Navy sailors, and then you know Mayor Cotterell fleeing, and everybody pelts him with their popcorn. So, I mean, that is such a crazy thing that happened, but yes, it happened in Florida.
And we all know when it comes to gun laws, you can't miss well-known gun lobbyist Marion Hammer.
Marion's in the chapter called Gunshine State, talking about our gun laws, that the laws that she has written and pushed through the legislature, concealed weapons law or our stand your ground law, have been copied by lots of other states. So we've become very influential in that way as well. In Florida, a lot of people say Florida actually resembles a gun, and we do have more concealed weapons permits issued in Florida than any other state. I think we're up to 1.6 million now. And I'm sure it's just a coincidence that we also lead the country in the number of gun-related accidents. sometimes because people carrying concealed weapons forget they're there and drop them.
Now, some of these stories are truly, truly weird.
One example, I guess, is the story of the fake count from down in Key West. He called himself Count Von Kassel, but he was actually just an X-ray technician. He wasn't a count. And he fell in love with one of the patients who came through getting x-rays, and his love transcended death, by which I mean that when she died, he dug up her body and lived with it for 9 years until her sister found out. She reported him to the authorities. He was duly arrested, charged with grave robbing, went to trial and was acquitted, but not because he was innocent, just because the statute of limitations had run out.
But in the midst of all the laughter, there is something to keep in mind, which Pittman points out.
Florida is consistently ranked 49th in funding for mental health programs, for which a Floridian can only say thank God for Texas. You know, and you know, all the folks who say all the politicians that say, you know, we're tough on crime, you want to ask them, well, don't you realize that a lot of the folks who are committing crimes are mentally ill, and maybe if we put some funding towards that, that might possibly change things as far as crime rates, but somehow folks never make that connection.
Oh, Florida is available online and in stores. Oh, and here's a little motivation for all of you politicos listening to this program. Don't give up on your ideas or dreams so quickly. If one person says no, don't get discouraged. It happens to the best of us. Here is Craig Pittman talking about the success of Oh Florida.
Well, the book's going well. I was very pleased to see it pop up on the New York Times bestseller list for travel books for July. So that was really nice. Especially given that 15 publishers turned it down initially for being too regional.
Sometimes it's just about finding the right time.
What I was hoping they would see, namely that by publishing it during an election year, it's a time when a lot of people are paying a very close attention to Florida. You know, we are the swingingest of swing states.
This is The Rotunda. I'm Tramell Gomes. This program is about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. Visit RotundaPodcast.com and check us out on social media at Rotunda Podcast. As we get ready for the 2017 legislative session, there are some very important renovations underway at the Tower of Power. I just like calling it that, but it's Florida's capital. Here's the story. For 2 years now, there have been plans to renovate parts of the Capitol complex until an inspection found things are in dire shape in the Senate garage.
The waterproofing had failed, and as the waterproofing failed, cracks in the concrete began to take place. Water got in the rebar inside the concrete. When it gets wet, it starts to expand, and then you have chunks of concrete that fall off the wall. And so that's something that happens in a lot of concrete structures, but it's something that let us know we had an issue with the waterproofing.
That's Chad Popple, Secretary of the Department of Management Services.
Mr. Popple, this is my first time meeting you. How long have you been the head of the Department of Management Services?
Almost 2 years now. Started back in December of 14. So I've been over here getting close to 2 years.
So what do you do? What does this agency do?
We're a very exciting agency, I think. We have 8 different business units that really serve as the state's central service provider. So you've got your basic HR functions, which are significant in size and scope, like your FRS, your healthcare, and then we provide HR consulting services for the state. We also have functions such as telecommunications, real estate, state purchasing, etc. So every day is different. There's always something going on in one of those areas that requires attention. And so it's an exciting place to work. We have a good pipeline of projects that can really help the state out.
So we are undergoing a big renovation of the Capitol. It's sort of like an emergency renovation in parts. What's going on at the big Capitol down the street?
Well, I mentioned we handle real estate. We have 109 buildings that we manage around the state. One of those happens to be the Capitol, and we have 3 projects scheduled to get going in the next year to 2 or 3 years. Each parking garage, we have a House parking garage, a Senate parking garage, and then the front side of the Capitol where the Dolphin, everybody knows it by the Dolphins, the Dolphin Fountain, that's called Waller Park, and that's the main drop-off area for the Capitol. So we have projects slated for those 3 sides of the Capitol. You mentioned one was kind of sped up due to necessity. We did have some engineering reports come back on the status of the Senate garage, where they wanted us to move quickly and start to get the weight off the top of that garage and get the folks that parked there find them other parking. So that one has been in the news, and that's one of the project that has our attention right now.
So what could have happened? Like, you know, could we have envisioned you guys are preempting someone parking there in the garage collapsing, falling down? What?
Well, hopefully not. We have been experiencing damage in the structure for some time. The waterproofing had failed, and as the waterproofing failed, cracks in the concrete began to take place. Water got in the rebar inside the concrete. When it gets wet, it starts to expand, and then you have chunks of concrete that fall off the wall. And so that's something that happens in a lot of concrete structures, but it's something that let us know we had an issue with the waterproofing. So we have been preparing to address that for some time, and we had a second set of eyes. We brought a second engineering firm in to take a look and evaluate our plans and what we were thinking about the garage. And that group, after discussing, you know, with the original set of engineers that did evaluation, they came back and they discovered in one of the girders, the main support girder, that some of the cracks had grown from the original assessment. And after doing some calculations, they grew pretty concerned that girder was overstressed. Mm-hmm. And so to prevent anything like you just mentioned from ever happening, they said, have people stop parking here, and we need to get on this right away. And so that's what we've been doing the last several weeks.
So what's going to be the impact for the parking adjustments? How long are we going to be seeing an overload or overflow or staff trying to find parking elsewhere?
Well, I have to say, I think that's one of the success stories of the early goings here. We worked with the Senate. Obviously, it's an inconvenience. But the Senate has worked hand in hand with us and the House as well. In working with the governor's office, we were able to find parking for the senators. There's three parking garages underground at the Capitol. Not a lot of people kind of know that. You drive by, you don't notice. But we found some parking under the Capitol for the senators and some of the key staff. And then we had some parking structures right across the street that we were able to move the rest of those staff over. So some folks may have had to move aside a little bit, but everybody has good parking close to work. And it's been going pretty well so far.
How come we're not seeing any of these issues over on the House side? Why did the senators get punished?
Well, they're not getting punished, but obviously it is an interesting question. So the Senate parking structure is actually in worse shape than the House parking structure. And there's the engineers have kind of speculated on a couple reasons for that. But one is, there's two that I can point to. There's less trees on top. The trees are actually planted in the roof of the parking structure. And so all that dirt and weight and the wind load on the trees, they believe that's really what's exacerbating the waterproofing failing and the concrete and all that sort of thing happening. So less weight on top. And then number two, it's actually designed a little bit differently. The support columns are a little closer together, and they believe that you know, is a stronger structure over there.
Yeah.
So it's interesting.
So how much will this all cost?
Good question. Well, we're coming into focus on the Senate parking structure. We know it's going to cost north of $20 million. So it's a significant project. We're having to take everything off the top all the way down to the concrete, re-waterproof. We have to do that to the vertical walls on the side. I believe it goes down about 40, 42 feet underground. Yeah. So there's a lot of work associated with getting down and being able to do that sort of work. So it's a pretty extensive project.
When it's all said and done, what is it going to be looking like? I think I saw snippets of the renderings. We're doing the front of the Capitol and all of that stuff.
It does present an opportunity. So to get the weight off the top and apply the waterproofing, you have to get down to the bare bones of the concrete on the parking garage. So we've been working with the Historic Commission and some architects on what can go back on top. And we've been asked by the legislature to work with the Historical Commission on a memorial gardens. So there was some statute passed recently. But it's basically going to create a place where the memorials that the legislature has been approving have a place to be stationed on Capitol grounds. And we have some pretty neat concepts that you have seen on how that would work. It'll change the way you navigate the Capitol grounds. It'll be a destination. Mm-hmm. And so that's pretty exciting because that's unused space right now is just, you know, rows of trees and some gardens and that sort of thing. So it could really change the way people experience the Capitol. Mm-hmm. and we think that's a neat opportunity. So we've got some stakeholders working with us on that, but we're excited about the possibilities.
A personal thing that I'm looking out for is shade. We're in the in summer right now,
right,
and it's so hot. And I know when I'm like leaving my parking space, trying to get to the Capitol, and that short distance, by the time I get to the Capitol, I'm drenched.
Yes.
Will there be shade and stuff like that on the Capitol grounds at the end result?
I can tell you that the pedestrian experience is something that's getting a lot of attention by the designers and our team. So that is something that we will be factoring in. But I will say, obviously, we are going to be, you know, we have to take out the trees, and we want to be good partners here in Tallahassee. And the folks at Tallahassee care about their trees.
Tree City.
Tree City. And so we are going to be putting back more trees than is required by the city's tree mitigation ordinance. We had to take out some oaks and things of that nature. So there's going to be trees on the grounds, but we're going to be smart about it. We're going to make sure we don't put very heavy trees with expansive root structures back on top of the roof and things of that nature. So it's a pretty neat question, and it's something that we're thinking about, and I think we've got some good designs in play right now.
Lastly, I was just about to wrap up, but I remember there was a concern for coal tar.
Yes.
How did that go over and informing the staff that has to, like, you know, pass through the construction area?
Right, and if you've ever done home renovations on an older home, you know, sometimes you run into some materials that were used, you know, 30, 40 years ago that we wouldn't use today, and that's what we've got here. Coal tar pitch was a pretty common application for waterproofing. And when you go about taking that off of the structure, which we have to do to re-waterproof it, there has to be an abatement process. And so we did have our right to know meetings with employees. We had several meetings 2 weeks ago. Those meetings went well, and in fact, we're getting ready to begin that process. So the word is out. Everybody's been informed. We have a very good firm in place to follow the standards. It's not an unknown problem, so that's a good thing. Folks know how to deal with that material, and so we've got those plans laid out, and we're ready to go.
All right. Anything else that you'd like to add that I didn't ask?
We just appreciate everyone's support. Obviously, construction of this size and scope on the Capitol grounds is going to cause a inconvenience from time to time. It's something we're aware of, and we appreciate the partnership that folks have had with us. Everybody seems to recognize that. You see the signs, you know, pardon our dust. You know, we appreciate everybody's patience. If they have any comments or concerns, I want them to feel free to call this agency, and we will pick up the phone and we will listen.
Thank you so much. I appreciate that.
No problem. All right.
That's it for this edition of The Rotunda. Special thanks to Republican strategist Bettina Inclon, Craig Pittman with the Tampa Bay Times, and Secretary Chad Poppe with the Florida Department of Management Services. Remember to visit rotundapodcast.com and join us again next week right here for more stories about the people and issues shaping Florida politics. I'm Tramell Gomes.